You're listening to Hey Bitches Podcast, episode 145. What's up, you guys? It's your girl, Carly, and welcome to Hey Bitches Podcast. Each week, we get together and chat through sex and dating, health and wellness, navigating every season of your life, and so much more. Think of Hey Bitches as your weekly get-together with your besties to explore new perspectives, take away new knowledge, and level up your life. Are you ready? Let's get into the episode. Hey bitches, what is up you guys? It's your girl Carly. Welcome back to Hey Bitches Podcast. I hope you guys are having an incredible day. I am so excited to be back. I'm excited to be doing the podcast again for you guys. And today I am very excited to be talking all about money. If you guys actually follow me over on Instagram, you guys would know I have been a lot more financially transparent. And in that way, I mean, I've done everything from share my salary or my business revenue of what I made last year, all the way to month by month, showing you guys exactly what I'm spending my money on, where I'm putting my money, whether it be in shopping or retirements or investments. And on the flip side of that, also showing you where the money actually goes when it comes into my business. Because if you guys don't know, I am incorporated. And if you're in the US, the equivalent of that is like an LLC. So that means my company and myself as an individual are separate entities. So I actually do pay myself a salary through my company. Sometimes a dividend. That's kind of like a more complicated situation that we aren't going to get into in this episode. But all of that to say is that I've been a lot more transparent about money and finances and my personal path with money and how I got to the place that I am today. And today I wanted to talk to you guys more in depth about money mindset, building wealth, budgeting, and everything in between. In case you guys also kind of feel this way, you want to get a hold of your money, you want to figure out what your financial future looks like, you're looking for a little more financial independence, a little bit more financial literacy, and you want to learn from somebody who is not a financial expert, because I should say that. I think that sometimes when we try to learn from the experts, it seems a little bit overwhelming because it's like they know something we don't know. And the something that we don't know is exactly how to manage our money because we're just like regular people. So I hope that this episode is really good for you in a way where we can kind of have a disarming conversation about money and financing and budget and how to grow our wealth and how to break out of potentially bad money mindsets and money habits. So with that being said, let's get into the episode. Building on the episode that I just did, which was the 10 things that I wish I knew in my early 20s, something that we talked about a lot in that episode was the idea of money. We talked about it in the capacity of saving more money when you're younger, but also not being afraid to spend that money. And then on top of that, talking a lot about credit cards and wishing I kind of used them differently when I was a little bit younger. All of that to say, I am 26 now. I am not in my early 20s anymore, but I have picked up a lot of money habits along the way that I wanted to share with you guys. Starting off, let's talk about money mindset and how to heal your money mindset if you do have a negative one that is contributing to bad financial patterns, unable to save, chronic spending, all of those types of things. I would like to say, and I've said this actually before, I'm not a psychologist. I don't have a psychology degree. I'm also not a financial expert. I don't have a financial degree. I've talked about this on the podcast before, I think too, where I told you guys that I've failed like my entry level accounting in my business degree like 3 times and almost had to appeal to the dean to be like, I need to take this class to graduate and I promise you I'm not a fucking idiot. Accounting just is not for me. I ended up being able to take it and I passed the second level, but all of that to say I am not an accounting girly or a financial expert and I need you to remember that. Okay, so going back to money mindset. Money essentially is like a big fucking mind game. For real though, like money is really deeply rooted in so many of our minds. And that can be in a good way, that can be in a bad way, that can be in so many different ways. Our money mindset is really reflected from our reality. So maybe some of us did have parents or mentors or peers growing up who did talk about money and the importance of money and how to be financially responsible. Or you could have grown up where people talked negatively about money or instilled it to you that it's scarce or that it's hard to make or it's hard to keep and so many other plethoras of ideas around money. But I think the biggest thing to keep in mind is that it really is all in our head when it comes to how we perceive money. So to kind of give you more of a breakdown of my personal money experience and my money mindset and my past with money, let's throw it back to my high school days, okay? So in high school, I worked like retail jobs. And then I also would pick up these brand ambassador shifts here and there. And so if you're unfamiliar with the idea of what like a brand ambassador is, essentially it's like experiential marketing. So a company would hire me. This is so like funny actually thinking back on this, because this is not dissimilar to my current job as an influencer, but a company would hire me, let's say it's Ford, to work at the car show and get people to enter to win a contest or to talk to the points about a new vehicle or anything kind of in that realm, where I was on site at their marketing activation and I would be talking to and enticing people to interact with their brand. Like I said, this is not far off of my actual current job of being an influencer, but the only thing is the experiential part is missing. I'm not doing that in person, I'm just doing it online. I think we all kind of know that the influencer marketing industry has a vast amount of money in it, in terms of how much influencers make, in terms of how much brands have allotted to influencer spending and XYZ. They have that same, if not more, budget when it comes to brand ambassadors and experiential marketing. And so when you're 15, 16, 17, like I was in high school, working like a weekend where I worked grueling hours, like I'd work a 12-hour day 2 days in a row, working those hours though would grant me a paycheck of like $1,500. Like I was making a paycheck in 48 hours the same way that some full-time employees, some full-time adults at that time were making that same biweekly paycheck in their 2 week work week turnaround period of their actual full-time job. Because of that, I think that really skewed my perception of how easy it is to make money. And I say easy in a way where essentially I did not have to put in, at the time I thought, as much as I was getting out. Yes, I was working my 12-hour days and I was actually like physically doing the work, I was there. However, in my head at the time, I was like, okay, well, you're doing real work when you have a 40-hour work week and you're working in an office 9 to 5. You're not doing quote unquote real work when you're working in a car show over the weekend. And like I said, I also had a part-time job at the time. So I had that like regular part-time job check, which was like more appropriate for my age and my like time that I actually put in. I'm sure I was only making like $500 biweekly, maybe even less than that. Because I was part-time, I was a student, I was literally a teenager. I was like 16 years old, but sometimes I would have the part-time job and these brand ambassador shifts kind of together, and it would result in me making like $3,000-$4,000 a month. And a teenager with no concept of the world and how money works, coming into $3,000-$4,000 plus of money was kind of a recipe for disaster. I say this really contributed to my money mindset of like money is easy to make, just because it was like having fake money. It was having like play money. Like in my mind, I wasn't working that hard, but I was getting a lot of money and I would spend it essentially with no consequence because I was a kid. I didn't have bills. I didn't have rent. I still lived at my parents' house, obviously. I had no real responsibilities outside of having fun. But I also knew that once the money ran out, there were so many other opportunities for me to create that money back in these like minuscule amounts of time that I was putting into making this money. And in a way, this is a good thing because it really did show me that like money is easy to make if that is your mindset. But then on the other hand, it created this financial pattern that it took me a long time, and I actually probably still am kind of struggling with this to this day, to break. That's like, I can spend all of my money because I know I'm going to make more of it regardless of what happens in my life or how fast I spend it. In my mind, money comes so easy, so I'll be able to make it back. And saying that out loud, I feel like the words that I'm saying are like a positive affirmation and a positive mindset around money, because when you're negative and you're having a negative conversation with yourself or having those thoughts about money where you're like, money is so hard to get, I will never see this money again, I need to hold on to it because money is hard to make, that's like a negative connotation, a negative connotation or a negative experience when it comes to money. But even though I'm saying money is easy to make. If I spend it now, I can make more. It was still kind of like a toxic, negative mindset because it wasn't said where it was an abundant mindset, where I was sure that if I wanted to, I could continue to make money in a positive way. It was in a way where it was like, well, I have no consequences. If I do this, then I know I'll be good. And that isn't like not teaching me anything. And subsequently, it did not teach me anything because I continued to just drain money, drain my bank accounts, save for nothing as I grew up. And it really kind of impacted my financial future as an adult. On top of that, I kind of mentioned this earlier that a lot of your money lessons are learned from the people around you, most notably like your parents or anybody who has a major influence in your life. My sister's dad had a huge problem with spending money, but not in a way where it was sad or it was like hurtful, but in a way where it was like he would spend so much money. And like, as a result, me and my sister would be like, this is fantastic because we were kids and we would be getting all of these presents and going on these trips and doing these things. But money would be being spent like water. And obviously when we're kids, me and my sister are 10 years apart. So she was like five at the time. So obviously when we're kids, we're like, okay, this is cool. Like I'm sure these people who are adults have this under control. But as I grew up and as I continued to have these conversations with my mom, it became very clear to me that it was like not actual good finance. Like it was not us getting gifts because there was this extra money. It was just like spending to simply spend. And that originally is where I also think the idea of money is easy to get and I can constantly spend it and it can come back to me was more solidified into my brain. I actually remember this conversation that I had with my mom in the kitchen and she was like, Carly, you should save money. I think I was probably like 17, 18 at this time. And she was like, you should be saving money. You should X, Y, Z. And I remember being so like ingrained in the money is easy, money is like water type of mindset that I told her, I was like, yeah, I probably should, but like you can't take money with you when you die. And that was really my mindset. I was like, well, you can't take it with you, so you might as well spend it. And I didn't have any type of concept of like, okay, yeah, you can't take it with you, but it can set you up for the future and the long life that you have ahead of you, because you bet at 18 years old, I had a lot of life ahead of me, even at 26. Like I'm literally 26 years old. I have so much more life left to live. I think if I continue with that mindset of you can't take it with you, money is like water, I would absolutely not be in the place that I am today with my finances. I think that quote is funny because as much as baby YGK was right, like you can't take money with you when you die, it was like, at what cost? At what cost was I right? The cost was the fact that I had no financial cognizance or financial understanding for years. Like flash forward in my life, I accumulated a lot of credit card debt. I didn't know how to properly save money. I was constantly blowing through money. I was constantly blowing through paychecks. Even as I was getting better jobs and making more money and more consistent paychecks, I was still blowing through it, wasting it on things. I would never ever look at my bank accounts unless I was checking if I could like afford something, but I wouldn't sit down at the end of the month and be like, how much money did I spend? Or like, maybe I'm doing too much on takeout or XYZ. I would not even consider that at all. And to the point where I would blow my paycheck money like it was water. And then I would start to use my credit card, like my credit card somehow auto replenished every single month. That was a really hard lesson to learn that doesn't happen. I still didn't learn it for like a hot minute. I would continue with these credit cards and blowing my money. And it was just like a vicious cycle to the point where my mom actually ended up paying off my credit card because she was like, you're ruining your credit. Like you need to get this together. And I was like, okay. And at the time I felt like, yeah, I can do that. But it happened. And then the vicious cycle just repeated itself. And I got myself back into more debt. All of this to say, my personal money mindset to give you the lay of the land, the background, I'm sure you figured it out by now, was that money really did grow on trees for me in that time of my life. I was like, okay, like money comes to me easily. I spend it all the time. I do these things and I can always get it back. But I was like blind to the consequences of that. I had like the horse blinders on where I was like, if I can't see it, it's not my problem. And that then unfurled into, like I said, things like credit card debt and ruining my credit and not having any savings. And all of those things. Now, if that resonates with you and you're like, okay, I feel that way. I think I'm in that stage in my life right now, but I don't want to be anymore. Here are 5 tips that I want to share with you guys and talk through about how to actually heal your money mindset so you can make that first step towards being more financially literate, to being more responsible with your finances, and maybe even helping to tackle debt, be that credit, student, exercise, medical, like any of those debts, and repair those financial neuropathways and create new truths and consistencies and routines around money to help you thrive and be a better person with your money in the future. Number one is to decide to be financially successful. Now, this kind of sounds like woo-woo and like, okay, Carly, we get it. Like, I can sit here and be like, I'm gonna be financially successful. But how does that actually help me? I've talked about mindset and acting as if and affirmations and all of that before heavily in multiple different categories and topics on the podcast. And I think that money is another place that we can really use affirmations, mindsets, and acting as if. So when I say that you need to decide to be financially successful, I mean it in a way where you need to start acting like you care about money, like you're happy to be spending it, but you're also equally as happy to be saving it and you're happy to be tackling your debts and understanding your finances and not being scared of the bad parts about the financial mess that you have created yourself. I've talked about the power of the subconscious before on the podcast as well, about how it rules like 95% of our brain or something like that. And so if we continue to tell ourselves the story that we are financially successful, eventually the story that we're telling ourselves and what's going on in our brain is going to become our reality. Now, that's not like an overnight thing. We aren't gonna like decide that we're gonna be financially successful and then tomorrow all of our debts will be expunged and we'll be like a brand new baby with no bad credit history or bad financial patterns. I mean it in a way where if you continue to affirm to yourself that you are financially successful, you will find yourself making more choices and doing more actions towards financial success versus towards financial disaster. Number 2 is to make peace with your fears and discomforts around money, as well as let go of your limiting beliefs. Obviously, step 1, you can decide to be financially successful, but then you have to actually face the beast, which is the reality of your money situation. This is so extreme and very individualistic and person to person when it comes to what people perceive as a money issue. One person could see $500 of credit card debt as a large issue that weighs heavily on them, versus another person could be like, oh, it's just $500, but they have $100,000 in credit card debt that is financially crushing to them. So I say this in a way where we don't have to compare our money distress or our money journey or our starting point to literally anyone else. What is really important is that you face your own fears and your own discomforts about the situation that you're finding yourself in with your money. I also think it's very important to be very honest about where you are with yourself, because a lot of the time, even when I was younger with my credit card, for example, I was like, okay, like I'll get it together. I'm making the payments. Like I'm doing the motions. Like it's not that bad. But if I would have just stopped and been like, you know what? It is that bad. I'm not making progress. I'm not actually helping myself. I'm not doing those things. What I'm doing is the bare minimum, which is actually probably affecting me negatively. I need to address that and be real with myself and stop sugarcoating it so it feels less painful and it makes me feel less dumb and stupid that I let myself get here. Building on that point, I do really think that a lot of us carry a lot of shame around the money situations that we might have gotten ourselves into. And this step number 2 for healing your money mindset with letting go of those fears and discomfort does help you to rid yourself of that shame and that guilt and set you up in a way where you can build a new money story and you can build a new identity that you won't feel shameful of, that you'll feel proud of, and you'll be happy that you got yourself there and you accomplished what you did. Touching on letting go of limiting beliefs, this is also something that is very like mindset, woo-woo, like affirmation-y type of focus, which you know I love and I'm obsessed with. Like I said, the learned experiences around money are the ones that will be your beliefs, your outward facing beliefs about money. So if you grew up in a family or around a person of influence who essentially said that money should never be spent unless it's on essentials and you should save literally everything and you should never indulge, then that is the money story that you're gonna have. However, if you feel like it's almost crippling or it's holding you back from living a good life, then you need to let go of that belief that is limiting you. Maybe you need to start thinking, I make money, I support myself, and I cover all of my bills. It's not wrong for me to indulge into things that bring me pleasure and happiness, even if they're not essentials in my life. The opposite side of the spectrum that I personally don't have a lot of experience with, but I do know that a lot of people do, especially growing up in any type of scarcity mindset household where maybe money wasn't consistent or you were struggling or you had any type of other trauma as it relates to financials growing up. I do think that letting go of those limiting beliefs and workshopping them and understanding that your past doesn't necessarily write your present story and that you can change the narrative at any point really does help you to turn into that person that you want to be. And this is for anything in life, but as it relates to money, letting go of those limiting beliefs and rewriting your story in a way that is positive and that aligns with you will help you to heal your money mindset and create a better outlook overall. Number three is to talk to someone open and honestly about your money situation. Now that one might sound scary because I know, like I said, a lot of people carry shame and disappointment and discomfort around their financial situations. However, the way that I kind of see this is that when you're honest with at least one person, it kind of brings it into your reality. Like I said earlier, a lot of my money problems when I was younger were kind of like up in the air for me. They were like floating around in my personal stratosphere, but they weren't real. They were like the gases or whatever that hadn't formed stars completely yet. I actually don't know if that's how stars are formed, but that's the metaphor we're going with. So everything was kind of up in the air for me until I was serious with my family about my credit card debt and with my friends about my financial situations, and it made it a lot more concrete and a lot more real. Now this can be something that's scary because we oftentimes don't want to admit that we're fucking up, but I do think that when you tell at least one person and it becomes a reality for you, sometimes you're more inclined to create that change because you don't want other people to be thinking that thing that you're ashamed of and that's bringing you the discomfort and you don't want to be a part of you is the thing that you actually are. So telling someone, whether that be your partner, your parents, your best friend, it has to be somebody that actually has like a stake in your life. It can't just be like people online or anonymous people. Telling somebody who has a stake in your life that you genuinely appreciate and that you genuinely like value their opinion of you brings it into reality and helps you ground your starting off point so you can become a different person that you are proud of and that they would be proud of too. Number four is to start investing in financial education. And I use the word investing not in a monetary way because obviously we're working to heal our money mindset. I use the word investing in a wealth of knowledge type of way. There are so many books, blogs, YouTube channels, resources, podcasts, anything in between at the tips of our fingers these days when it comes to financial education that if you just sit down and you look and you type it out onto Google, there are so many resources that you could find. Personally, reading books, absorbing those financial blogs or the content of the podcasts or anything like that really ignited that fire for me to want to be better with my money and be a lot more financially literate. And having those resources, like I said, so accessible will also help you to know how to lay the roadmap to get from the point A that you're currently at to the point B you want to be at. Number five is to allow and celebrate incremental progress. I think that with anything, when we take on a big challenge, whether that be getting serious with our money, or maybe it's like a fitness related challenge, or we want to buy a house, or we want to change careers, or we're like doing any of those types of things, we don't really allow ourselves to celebrate the incremental. We want to celebrate the end only. And I think that what's really important when it comes to financial progress and healing your money mindset is celebrating the incremental. That could be something like celebrating the fact that you paid more than the minimum on your credit card this month and you're getting ahead on that certain card. Or that could be things like celebrating the fact that you actually bought yourself that finance book and you're reading it. And celebrating also too, when I say that, doesn't have to be monetary celebration either. That could be indulging in your favorite TV show for an extra episode longer, or having like a fun self-care day at home, or anything that you kind of deem a celebration when it comes to you personally. Because I do think also too that when you reaffirm yourself with these positive actions that make you feel good, you're a lot more inclined to continue to push through the harder things if you know that there are incremental celebrations ahead of you. Because a lot of the time, the grueling start to finish and having to motivate yourself or have others motivate you or anything like that can be a grind. And a lot of us don't enjoy that feeling, and it often leads to people giving up. So making sure to celebrate that kind of incremental progress, I think, is really key when it does come to healing your money mindset. Okay, so now that we've talked through healing your money mindset, let's talk how to start a budget. Okay, so to be completely honest, budgeting is a new concept for me. I was not kidding you when I said that finance and financial literacy and that kind of thing is something that's almost kind of a new concept to me in the capacity that it currently is in my life. I think that as I grew up and I started making more money, my mindset was less money grows on trees, but it was definitely not you should be saving and you should be aware and you should be set up for things. Even though I was doing things like paying off my credit card and being a little bit more mindful, I was definitely not as mindful as I am today. And I'm actually very proud of myself and very happy to be in this financial understanding and have the financial literacy that I do have today. And I wanted to share with you guys how I came across creating my budget and any future budgets to come. So step one in creating your own personal budget is to track everything that you spend for 1 month. I did this originally as the baseline. And I think this is what you need to do too, because you can think that you're not spending as much money as you actually are until the cold hard facts are in front of you on the paper or on your Excel sheet. This honestly was very surprising to me, and it affirmed some other thoughts that I knew deep down it would. Like, I was spending way too much money on takeout, and I was shopping impulsively and not actually buying things that I thought I needed, or I guess I thought I needed in the moment that maybe I didn't actually, or I didn't put enough thought into, and I wanted to return it and I never did, and then I could never return it again, and I essentially just like ate that loss. Tracking your money for 1 month and spending just how you normally do is going to be very insightful for you, because you will find out where you're spending your money and also, importantly, how much money you are actually spending per month. Number two, before we get into actual like numbers and strategies and categories of saving money, what I want you to do after you've tracked the money for 1 month is to take a real look at subscriptions or recurring payments that you're paying for and cancel the ones that you're not actually using. This is something that freed up a lot of money for me personally, because I was subscribed to things that at the time I was like, yeah, this is great. And then I think I just saw it continuing on my credit card bill. And I was like, oh, okay, yeah, that's that subscription. But when I actually like sat down and faced the facts and I was like, I haven't used this thing that I'm paying for in months, it was definitely an eye-opening experience. And like I said, it freed up a lot of money. So step two after tracking your money for a month would be to cancel any subscriptions or charges that you don't actually need and that you have not used. Number three is to think about your financial goals. For example, do you want to retire? When do you want to retire? Do you have an emergency fund? Is there money in the emergency fund? How much money? How much money would you need to live every single month? Et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. The list goes on. Think about your financial goals. Now, I think that a lot of financial goals that a lot of people don't think about is retirement and their emergency funds, which I think is fair, because especially when you're faced with other debts like credit card or medical or student loan or anything type of in between there, thinking about saving money and not putting that money towards paying your debts down is kind of backwards. But if you are in a position where you are thinking about retirement and you are looking to start an emergency fund, here is my advice on how to build out both of those savings buckets. Okay, so for retirement, what you're gonna do is look at your previous month spend. So step one, your first month where you tracked all of your expenses and you spent essentially exactly the same as you have been this whole time. That number, when you total it up, is your rich enough expenses. So essentially, that means how much money you would need to make every single month to live the standard of life that you are currently living right now. For easy math, let's say that number is about $5,000 a month. Now let's think about when you want to retire. Let's say it's 65. Taking that $5,000 a month in expenses for you to live the exact same standard of life that you are living right now, you are looking at $2.1 million to ride out the rest of your days in retirement from 65 to 100. Now saying that number out loud seems kind of insane because $2.1 million is a lot of money. And you might be like, Carly, how the fuck am I about to save $2.1 million before I'm 65? Like, how much money do you think I make? This is crazy. Like, the economy is trash right now. And I get it. I totally get it. And this is why I think that retirement and the idea of saving money is scary to a lot of people. But I do want to put some solid numbers on here to kind of give you the context of it. So now that you understand how much money that you would need between the age of 65 to 100 to maintain your lifestyle that you are currently living, you have to understand that the goal when it comes to retirement is not to save all of that money and then take it out. Like, yes, that is the overarching goal and the overarching understanding of retirement. However, essentially what you want to do is set yourself up in a way where you're making enough profit and dividends month over month with these investments that you're making when you're younger, that you can continue to kind of take those earnings and live off of those earnings versus pulling directly out of the nest egg that you created, which is your retirement savings. There are a lot of online calculators that will tell you how much money that you need to save per month if you want to hit a certain goal by the time that you retire. But for the sake of this example, if you are looking to retire at 65, your expenses are $5,000 a month, that is the life that you want to keep, then you are looking at a $2,000 a month retirement contribution between now and the age of 65. Moving on, let's talk about emergency funds. Do we remember the pandemic? I know we all do because it really was not that long ago. And if you follow me on Instagram, you would know that it was not so long ago that I did have COVID in February of 2023. So that is like a real painful point, a real painful realization in my life. Right in my face. That being said, I'm sure you do. I'm sure that you also remember if you did or did not have an emergency fund set up when the world shut down and financial instability hit you. So if you're starting to realize the importance of an emergency fund, here is how you can create one for yourself. Similar to the retirement exercise we just did, the first thing you're going to want to do is add up all of the totals of the essentials that you would need to live month over month. This doesn't include things like shopping or takeout or any of those things, literally just your essentials, your rent, your utilities, your phone bill, anything that you pay for that you need to live your life. Totaling all of that up, it does give you your essentials number. Now take that number and multiply it by 3 at least. For example, let's say that your essentials comes out to $3,000 a month. That's all of the money that you would need to cover every single one of your bills month over month. Multiply that by 3, you're looking at $9,000 that you need to save in an emergency fund. Now, there are so many people out there who say you should save for 3 months, 6 months, 1 year. I would suggest saving a minimum of 3 months in a emergency fund. However, I do kind of lean more towards the cautious side, which is the 6 month mark, especially because as we've seen, as we're exiting the pandemic, there's still a lot of job instability. The job market has been harder and a lot of people are struggling still. So having that 6 month cushion versus a 3 really could be very helpful to you in the long run. So that's kind of where I personally would land when it comes to creating your financial goal. So number 4, after you've done all of those things, is to allot yourself categories. This can be things like rent, utilities, fun money, takeout, groceries, whatever it is, create a category for it and be realistic. When you're doing this, you need to also be realistic and be aware of your goals. This could mean that your $500+ a month that you're spending on takeout needs to be dwindled down to $100. So you need to be a lot more intentional with the money that you are spending on Skip or Uber Eats because your budget is a lot lower. And I say this because let's say you are spending $500 a month on takeout. However, you actually allot $100 to take out. Now you have $400 to put into a different category. That extra money could go into your retirement savings, or it could also go into your emergency fund or any other category that you're kind of allotting it into. If we're being honest, this will probably suck because you're so used to not caring about the money or where it goes or where it comes from that being a lot more painfully aware is definitely not going to be your favorite cup of tea, but it is very important for you to get real and realistic and aware of where your money is actually going and into which categories it should be going. Number five is to automate as much as you can. It feels a lot less bad when your hard-earned dollars are going into things like retirement and emergency funds and like not the fun money when you can't see that it's not there. So I would suggest that you automate things as much as you can. If you know you want to contribute $100 every single paycheck to your emergency fund, set it up to automatically take that money out. So when you wake up and you look at your bank account, that money is already there. It's not really even money that you miss. Now, if you're the kind of person who gets tempted even by seeing their savings account, what I would do is create a savings account at a completely different bank. That way, when the money is taken out, it's not like you see your checking account and then your savings account and you see all of the money in your savings account and you're like, ooh, look at all this money I can spend. When it's at a completely different bank that you literally only use for savings, you're a lot less inclined to look at it and then in turn, a lot less inclined to spend it. Number six is to hold yourself accountable. Now that you have it all set up, your next job is to track it. For me personally, what I like to do is sit down almost every single day and go over the expenses from the day before. There will obviously be days where I didn't spend money, where I didn't leave the house, where I didn't do any of those things, but those days honestly are few and far between. Sometimes there's days where I do spend $4, or sometimes there's days where I spend $500. Either way, I'm sitting down and I'm tracking them in the moment. If you're not the person who likes to do this day by day, I would suggest doing it week by week, but never month by month. I think that facing the reality of the money that you're spending week by week will be a lot more impactful than sitting down once a month and totaling it all together, because you're also a lot more aware of what categories you're spending a lot more money in, how close you are to budgets, and also how much you have left to spend for the rest of the month. And you can create discipline around your spending to make sure that stretches and you're not sad or disappointed when you hit the budget or the limit of the category that you're spending that money in. Number seven, last on how to start a budget, is don't punish yourself. Personally, I think that while budgeting and having financial goals and whatnot is incredible, I also think that going too far the other way is also a bad thing. Sometimes it is okay to overspend in a certain category. I'm not talking your budget was 100 and you spent 600. I'm not talking about that at all. I do think that it's okay to be flexible when it comes to certain budgets. For example, in February, my grocery budget overall was $500, but I spent 600, but it was because a week of that I was quarantined at home and my only choice was takeout and having things come to my door versus going to the grocery store and getting my own food. And so I was lenient with myself about spending more money in that category, not because I was irresponsible, but because it was what I had to do. Overall, I think that if that $80 that you spent at your friend's birthday dinner to make sure that you're having a good time puts you over your fun money budget of the month, that's not a bad thing. And you shouldn't really beat yourself up for that. You didn't spend it begrudgingly. And even though it went over your budget, you were happy to spend it because you were creating memories and you were having great times with your friends. And that should not be punished. Wrapping up this episode, let's talk about how to invest in your future wealth. Investing in your future wealth is definitely something that I want to dive deeper into now that I kind of have more financial agency over my life. Investing in terms of like stocks and bonds and T-bills and RRBs and all of these things that I actually had no idea about until very recently is something that I want to get into, that I want to set myself up for with future financial success. But I will say right now, I am definitely not the person to teach you about those things. While we all know that investing and using that time value of money when we're younger, when it comes to investing in like stocks and like actual monetary things is the way to go, investing in your future wealth doesn't actually always mean in dollars. However, if you are looking for that pathway, here are five books that I recommend about money, finance, and investing. Number one is Miss Independent by Nicole Lappin. This book is what really kicked me into gear when it came to investing in terms of stocks and futures and retirements and what that looks like for me. So that is a really good option if you are in the same kind of boat. There's also Broke Millennials Guide to Investing by Erin Lowry, Girls That Invest by Simran Kaur, The Black Girl's Guide to Financial Freedom by Paris Woods, and Girls Just Want to Have Funds by Camelia Falkenberg. Now, if you're looking for those non-monetary ways to invest in your future wealth, here are three of them that I think are important. Number one is to switch to a bank that is aligned with your goals. I know that we have this weird sense of loyalty to the banks that we grew up with. However, shop around and see what aligns with the financial future that you see for yourself. Are there banks with less fees? Maybe they're completely online. You don't go into the bank anyways, so you don't need to be being charged that fee to have that bank account? Is there a bank that is offering a higher yield savings percent? Is there people offering money back incentives for transferring a certain amount of money into a new savings account? I would just suggest looking around, because even though we're talking about money in the sense of banks, shopping around and finding a bank that is aligned with your future goals doesn't actually cost you money. If anything, it helps to increase the wealth that you currently have. Number two is to invest in your future career by networking and putting yourself out there. Honestly, you never know when the people that you know are going to be in rooms or have opportunities to put you forward for your dream opportunities. And I think this is really important, not only to cultivate relationships and friendships with people who actually care about you, who want to see you do good in life. It also is really important because there could be people in your life that know your goals and your ambitions and where you want to be, that you met through a friend of a friend or at a networking event, that when that opportunity comes up and they think of you, they can recommend you for that, which could be your dream opportunity. I say this in a way where it's investing in yourself and your future career, because even if you're not working the dream job that you want to be working right now, you can still attend these networking events and these functions. Oftentimes, a lot of them are free. Meeting people for the most part is free, and creating those relationships will help you navigate life to come. And if you are being a great person, a decent person, you are actually genuinely forming these relationships and these connections, you truly never know where those things will lead you and what opportunities they will give you in life. The last non-monetary way to invest in your future is to hone your skills. We live in an age where everything is at our fingertips with the internet, and getting ahead and honing the skills that will be valuable to you and your future career is something that you can do for free in the comfort of your own home to invest in your financial and your personal future. Maybe that means you learn a competitive edge for your career, or you create a side hustle that eventually becomes your full-time gig. There are so many resources, teachers, influencers, YouTube channels, Twitter accounts, XYZ that you can sit down and make time for in your life for free to create your competitive advantage, to hone your skills, to get yourself further than you are right now, so you can poise yourself to be that person that you know you want to be in your future. With that being said, that does wrap up our last point on how to invest into your future in a non-monetary way, and brings us to the end of this money episode. I really hope you guys enjoyed hearing a lot about my own money mindset and my own journey, how to overcome a negative money mindset, and how to create a positive one that sets you up on a better financial future and financial path, as well as learning how to budget and investing in your future wealth. This is definitely a topic that we will continue to talk about on the podcast as I learn more and as I bring on guests who are the experts in these different types of financial circles and channels. And I'm really excited to have those guests on there in the future. So make sure you subscribe and stay tuned for that. That is it for today's episode. I really hope you guys enjoyed it. If you did, make sure to screenshot this episode and share it over on Instagram and tag me at Hey Bitches Podcast. I would absolutely love to chat shit with you guys in the DMs about today's episode. Before you go, make sure to subscribe to Hey Bitches wherever you listen to podcasts, and make sure to head to youtube.com/@HeyBitches and subscribe to our YouTube channel where you can watch the podcast every single week. If you are an Apple Podcast listener, make sure to give the show a 5-star rating and review. It really does help me out. It helps the show get discovered, and I would really appreciate it. I love you guys so much. I will see you next Tuesday. And for now, bye-bye, bitch.